off to a good start this year. Very, very busy. In December and January just really started.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, returning clients. I guess they're figuring it's comfortable. They can safely spend money. Yeah. I was at a client's office this afternoon and they just bought it. Very nice.
Good evening, everyone. We'll get started just a couple seconds here. I'm Director Lloyd, and I'm the President of the Board for this year. And I welcome you all. Happy New Year's to you. Thank you for coming out on this winter evening. I hail from Michigan, and I can tell you this is absolutely a Michigan night. Have a large agenda tonight, but it certainly is important, and some critical issues that we need to talk about as a community, and so I want to thank everybody for coming out. Why don't we go ahead and get started at this point with a roll call. Director Toombs?
Here.
Director Gillette?
Here.
Director Lipscomb?
Here.
And Tony Lloyd here. And General Manager Harmon is here. So, a couple things that we're working on to improve the quality of our meeting. We're going to try them and see how they work out. As we go into our public comment section, I would ask that we are, so that everyone that wants to speak gets an opportunity to get up and make public comments, that we try to contain ourselves to 3 to 5 minutes maximum. I'm going to ask Chief Harmon after about 3 minutes to give us the high sign, and that way we will get through public comments, and I think everybody will be served well by that. The second thing that I would like to begin as a practice is the use of our titles when we are addressing board members and when we are addressing the police department and members of the public with their professional titles as well. It's just a matter of courtesy, and I think that respect will help everyone in appreciating all that we do as a community for each other. All right, moving forward then, it's time for public comments. If there are people with public comments, please come up and state your name if you'd like. And again, let's be mindful of the amount of time so that everyone can get up and get a chance to speak.
Hello, can you hear me? Yeah, okay. Deanna Collis. I'll just read what I wrote, it's easier. First, I would like to thank the chief and his officers, especially Detective Stegman, for working so hard to present us with accurate crime statistics. Accurate crime statistics are very important. They are used to justify raises and accommodations. The chief made it a priority for our statistics to match those of the FBI. Throughout 2012, we were updated on the progress. Detective Stegman reported when categories were added or changed. It is now easy to see the details. I was able to figure out how you arrived at the 80% Part 1 clearance rate that the chief reported at the October meeting, but I'm concerned that this number is rather high. Our national average is 45%. I am pleased that this number indicates how well our police force is doing, but since there have been so many procedural changes, I would like to validate that our definition of clearance rates is in line with the FBI requirements. I would like to know what the definition of a closed crime is. It's on our statistics every month that you get the categories, and it says closed. So I just would like to clarify what that means, because the FBI states that an administrative closing of a or clearing of a case by a local law agency, the administrative closing or clearing of a case by a local law agency does not mean that the agency has cleared the offense, according to the UCR. So The FBI is very specific about the definition of clearance rates. The calculation is total crimes divided by crimes cleared by arrest, not number of criminals, and closed by exceptional means. The definition of exceptional means is very specific. Only cases run to ground where perpetrators cannot be arrested may be included in that category. Apparently, some regional reporting entities include crimes closed by administrative means, and it's artificially inflating their rates. So truth and transparency matter, and please provide me with the answers to the above questions. I am proud of our department and want to ensure that our statistics are accurate and beyond reproach. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
I have a copy and an email here if you want to respond by email or to what the closed category means.
Sure. Sergeant Hull will take that.
Okay. I'll be
I wish I would.
Our next speaker.
I'm Leonard Schwartzberg, and I'm going to read an email that I sent to General Manager Herman, and it's about my PRA request for a copy of the audit that he relies on to state that he was cleared. And he wrote back to me and said that it was part of his personnel file and therefore not available for scrutiny. So this is the email that I sent to him on December 18th of last year, 2012. Mr. Harmon, I know your assertion about the audit being unavailable for public scrutiny. I disagree with your application of the law in question. Please bring the matter to the board at the next meeting as an agenda item. That hasn't happened, I might note. This is a formal request. If there is a legal opinion you rely on to support your assertion, please, as a PRA request, furnish me with that written opinion, which naturally must be more than conclusionary. I request the kind of opinion that would satisfy a judge with adequate legal argument to be admissible. My complaint, by the way, I had complained about intimidation, some directed towards me, I said, my complaint is not against any particular officer, but rather about the culture of intimidation I believe you have created. It is also a request that you take this concern shared by many in our community seriously and make public what you are doing about it. So if my complaint is about anyone, it's about you. Please bring this entire matter of the record request and the climate of intimidation to the board. It is my opinion a clear violation of both your duty and your authority to refuse to do so. Regardless of my official position towards you, at a purely personal level, I wish you and your wife a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. I have copies of this for all of you, and I request the opinion upon which, the legal opinion upon which, a refusal to provide a document which was used to attack a sitting member, director of the board, with the assertion that that document was a basis for that attack, which it seems to me brings it out of any kind of protected status, even if it had protected status to begin with, which I doubt. So that's my statement and my request. It's an official request. Okay, this is an official request. Oh, also, Director Lipscomb, two meetings ago you said that you were working on the per diem for expenses. You said that you would actually have numbers in there, you know, a true protocol for per diems. I would like to know what progress has been made on that. It's now about 20 months since the matter first came up, and it was dealt with several meetings back, and I was assured by you at that time that you were going to do that, and I'd like to know what the status of that is, please.
Stick around for the board report.
Thank you. I would ask the chief to, if he would like to comment on, in regards to any of the information that Mr. Schwartzberg has just...
Dr. Schwartzberg, if you're going to demand that titles be used, please be respectful.
Well, sir, I just responded the way you introduced yourself.
I didn't introduce myself as Mr. I did not.
You saw the tape.
There it is.
You said Leonard Schwartzberg.
In any case, Chief Harmon is, would you like to respond to whether or not this is a sequestered request and is still under the protection of our attorney-client privilege?
Well, over and over again, all personnel matters involving public employees as well as police officers are protected and are confidential. The Hemming Morris report that you speak of is part of my personnel file. However, at the last board meeting, the board authorized Hemming Morris to do a, what would you call it? We used a term. I had requested that they take into account some other information that was not made available to them when they first completed the report. Now, once that report is completed with that new information that was provided, at that time, I'll decide whether or not I'll waive my right for confidentiality. But I'm hoping I can make the report public once it's correct to the way it should be.
Thank you, Chief Harmon. I'm sorry, I didn't understand.
The regular audit is performed every year. Is that what we can't see?
No, you can see the audit of the district is made available. The audit 10-11 for fiscal years 10-11 has not been completed yet because of the allegations made by Director, ex-Director Kolsel. So once those allegations were completely cleared, then the auditor has begun the process of completing the 10-11 audit.
How can it be that somebody's personnel file holds up city or our business, our papers, our any of the living?
Well, accounting practices mandates that he was unable to finish the audit until this matter was cleared up.
But were you acting as general manager or police chief?
Okay,
let me answer that question. I'd like to clarify that because whether it's the general manager or the chief of police, both those files, personnel files, are protected. No, that's incorrect. All public employees are protected. Their personnel files are protected. All public employees, whether they're the general manager, the janitor at the local gym.
Ms. Collis, you're out of order.
Okay, and I'd like to clarify, if I can.
Sure.
I am an employment lawyer, and so I deal with these kinds of issues all the time. Everybody in this room who is an employee is protected by the California constitutional right to privacy. Let me just explain that first, okay? So everyone's protected by the California constitutional right to privacy. So just as your personnel file could not be released to me for wherever you work, whether it's the GM or the police chief, his matters that are in his personnel file cannot be released either. So that's the privacy issue. Okay, hold on. I'm getting to your next question, okay? With respect to any investigation that was done regarding an allegation of misconduct by the chief, that would be a personnel matter. So that investigation would be protected under that privilege. The privacy right that all of us have and then the special privilege that the police officers have. Your next question, I think, is, but what about the audit of the district in general? And is that protected? And I don't know, but what I heard the chief say is that because they held up the audit, the complete audit of the district until they cleared up this matter, that audit has actually not been completed. As soon as it is completed, then it will be released to the public.
But the numbers are being held up, not the actual file. We don't know what's being filed. The actual audit is being held up. And I think that if anybody is using that, then they would get used to that.
Could we conclude this discussion and then go to the next?
Ms. Collis, the auditor will not complete the audit until the complaint was resolved. It isn't we're holding it up.
Or that the audit...
Or that the audit may be in part existing. It cannot be, could not be completed until that matter was cleared up. And that was a protracted matter.
But I think it's a fair question, and thank you for raising it.
I'm sorry, Dr. Schwartz, were you wanting to add something to that?
I'd like to know why, if as Chief Harmon asserts, that the audit in question with regard to credit card use clears him, why wouldn't he want that known? Does he not have the right to release that document?
Did you hear what I said earlier? I said the board last month authorized Hemming Morris to take the information that I provided to them and take that into account into the audit. Now, once Hemming Morris makes the adjustment to their audit, they were given information from me that they didn't have when they completed the audit. It was very important information. Okay, part of my rights as an employee is to respond to any type of personnel matter against me. I took that and I gave the Hemming Morris auditors information that they did not have at the time they completed the audit. Once that information is in their revised audit, I will make a decision at that time if it's in my best interest to make that audit public.
Now, I let this conversation go even though it's public comment time because I think it's really important that we clear up miscommunication and that we're all seeking the same level of truth. And so I appreciate your questions and let's, in the spirit of moving along, let's move along at this point. If there are further discussions about this topic, it could take place after the meeting or at some later time. Okay.
My name's Dan O'Brien. I'm a resident of Kensington, and I, too, have an official request for a proposal. I think mine is looking forward a lot farther than it looks back, and I hope it is far less contentious than some that have been in the past. But my concern is the overall wildland fire danger situation that exists within the park and surrounding properties. I think it's significant enough that it should be dealt with. And I've put together a little paper that I put in the back. Some of you have probably picked it up, and I gave them to the board. I hope you have the chance to read that. It provides a little more depth and insight into what's going on. But as a little background to set the stage for what I'm talking about, in 1923, there was a fire in Berkeley, referred to as a Berkeley firestorm, that burned in one day from Wildcat Canyon down to Shattuck Avenue. 584 homes were burned. In the Oakland Hills fire in 1991, there's 25 people killed, 150 burned, 3,334 residences destroyed by fire. Again, all pretty much in one day. So my point is, I think these things are not apparent one day, and the next day there's ashes. And I think there's an obligation to consider that in the management of the park's vegetation. There was also a fire about 20-ish years ago that occurred in Kensington on top of the hill up here that did not destroy any houses. It did burn three or four that were damaged, but they were not destroyed. They were fortunate to able to catch that and extinguish it before it got farther. I think the difference between any of those three fires is very small as far as the probability of success in containing them. It's just a very, very lucky break. I think what we do is we have, in California, certainly the Bay Area, we're known for earthquakes and fires in California. We treat the earthquakes very differently. We treat the earthquakes, we have our buildings designed so they'll withstand a certain level of earthquake, and yet in the fire realm, we do very, very little. And the consequences of both can be equally devastating. In a day you have a building, the next day you do not have a building. I think on that basis, we should start looking at managing some of the vegetation in and around the park. There, I know these are austere times, and I think certainly money's a problem, but I would just ask the question, what does it cost to replace a school? Or what does it cost to replace the building that we're in? Or any one building in the park? Or the neighboring houses? I think there's a considerable economic concern involved here, and I think it can be corrected through a community action group that can get together. And what my proposal is that we develop a plan that can be submitted for grants and proposals. We can form a citizens group to do a lot of the work. And I think over time, certainly not at one effort, but we can mitigate this level and reduce it, continue to reduce it and maintain it. So the other thing that I would add is I think that to be effective in this, it's not just the parklands that are involved. There's also the school district lands just up the hill that are heavily timbered and vegetation. I think the neighboring properties are. They're all going to be affected by the same fire, and I think it's going to take a broader community effort to respond to that. So what I'm asking the board is for some sort of okay or approval to go forward and develop this with some neighbors and within the park itself to see what needs to be done, how it could best be done, and proceed from there. And that's my proposal.
Thank you, Dan. Dan came to me via Director Lipscomb with this concept. Of course, we've talked about it in subsequent years, and so it's not a totally new concept, but the opportunity to be focused on proactively on some of these things is I think well worth our effort, and I would hope that my colleagues on the board would be willing to discuss this and have Dan present to us a more detail of his plan at some future meeting.
Well, Tony, what about board members and public? Do we need an ad hoc committee on this? I think this is a great idea because we're part of the puzzle. The fire board is there, and they do. They go around the community and they check out vegetation and all. I don't know. I was successful in pushing my neighbors to get the vegetation cut back, but I hadn't had any result from just the fire board inquiring with them. I don't want to go there. But there is the school board, the fire board, and our board. And it seems to me like, and then there's the regional park district. So we almost have to have a something that transcends just our district. We could clean up the park like crazy and still have it come up over the hill and hit a bunch of houses there. So we need to get, I see, four entities involved. And Dan, for the benefit of the audience here, Dan is an expert in fire management. That is has been his job. How many years were you in that?
About 50.
About 50 years. So the fact that he would like to be a player in this is really fortunate for our community. So I think we could use an ad hoc committee on this. It's something that we could attack proactively, get some standards in place, get some management going, and you'd be the ideal person.
Director Toombs, Director Joel, would you like to comment?
Yeah, I just wondered whether any of the other groups are working on this at all.
Not that I'm aware of, or if it's very incidental or sporadic. There's not been any continued or sustained effort in this direction at all.
I can address part of that. I was in the LAFCO meeting earlier this week, and there's the LAFCO organization, which are the supervisors in the local governments, kind of the model around us. They are very much involved, and one of their priorities is growth of fire retardant, growth management, vegetation. And again, as I think the Director Lipson was pointing out to, it requires the intertwining of the various initiatives, and so this may have kind of given us the opportunity to talk with the other agencies, see what they're doing, talk with our own fire department, and then look within ourselves, because we've got paths that we're going to be talking about that's got vegetation on it. We've got the park building committee that's going to be working specifically in this area too. So there's a lot of touchstones, I think. But that was answering your question.
Well, I think it's a great idea, and I like the idea of an ad hoc committee.
Well, at one point, I did talk to some of the other potential players, if you will. The school district principal thought that was a little beyond her pay grade and was going to check higher up and get back with me. The fire department talked, and I talked to Michael Bond, and he is very enthusiastic and wants to get together as soon as possible to discuss it further. I talked to Ciara Wood, who's doing a project up on Lake Drive and is also on the Diablo Fire Safety Committee. And we walked through the park, and she's very, very interested and excited about cooperating. So I think the planets are fairly well aligned. It's just somebody needs to fire the starting pistol.
Well, how do we go about getting an ad hoc
committee? Well, funny that, thank you very much. Well, we've got to move on, but tonight we're going to be talking about committees. So that it's a segue into that, and I think we need to talk with the general manager also, as that falls into the bailiwick of Parks and Recreation, and see what we can do, and invite Dan to come and perhaps be a resource for that discussion.
One thing I would encourage is that we not let this drag out too long.
Yeah.
I mean,
right.
I think the urgency that you're expressing is real, and we should address it as soon as possible. It seems pretty easy to say, let's just do it and form it.
And it seems like if we do this, if we get, and especially if we involve all of the players as a force, we could really do a lot to qualify for pre-need, if you will, grants.
You undoubtedly fare much better as a collective body
than as a single body.
Right.
Because I remember we tried to get, Nikki Kaiser tried to get a $5,000 grant for the park, and we gave a resolution for that, but she was unsuccessful in getting it. I think if we had an organized program that encompassed these other entities as well, and we could do it as a force, that would put us in better shape to get maybe some pre-emergency monies to come in.
Well, I think we have a path. Thank you very much, Dan. We'll get in touch with you, and we'll huddle, and then we'll be able to, in perhaps the next meeting or the meeting thereafter, at the very latest, come back with some type of straw plan that the community can react around.
Okay, that'd be fine. Thank you.
Thank you for your time tonight.
Sure.
Maybe even through public safety.
Yeah. Are there any other public comments?
Joan Gallegos.
Hi, Joan.
And my comment is kind of a question. On January 28th at 10 in the morning, the Contra Costa Special Districts Association is going to meet out in Martinez. And the main item of discussion is going to be the state retirement legislation. And I would hope that as many of the members of this board as can would go to that meeting.
It is on my calendar.
Okay.
It's on mine.
Thank you.
Mine too.
My name is Mabry Benson, and I want to make a comment regarding the general manager chief of police job that's described in our policy manual. I look on this upon this job as administrative officer. She or he administrates board policy, i.e. The job of general manager. Why is it presumed that the chief of police is always the general manager and vice versa? It may not always be that way. In fact, I don't think it should be that way. The two realms of activity are totally different, and the separation and distinction should be made. The police department is basically a military organization. Because of its nature, it exerts, because of its nature and the nature of military organizations, it exerts an intimidating force. As a simple example, think of the police car following you down the Arlington. If the police wanted to intimidate you, they could legitimately cite you many times over for traffic violations from the El Cerrito to the Berkeley lines. Running district business should not have any aspect of intimidation to it. As a democratic nation, we are always upset and outraged when in another country the military runs the civilian government. Yet, I think this is a similar situation. The civilian job of district administrative officer and the policing job should be clearly distinguished, preferably separated. And I might also comment that as a Democrat, I believe that the titles Mr. and Ms. are sufficient for everybody in our country, including Mr. Obama.
Thank you. Are there any other commenters? Okay, seeing none, I'll now ask for board comments, starting with Director Toombs on my right.
Okay, can you guys hear me? I'm never sure if this thing's working. We have another board meeting this Saturday, and it's going to be discussing the public financing options that we've looked at for the park buildings. So I'd urge as many of you with an interest in this topic to come down. Saturday, 9 o'clock, we have a presentation by NHA Advisors, who is the consultant that we obtained to do a profile on what kind of public financing options we have. So we'll see you then. Coffee will be served. Thank you.
Thank you, Director Toombs. Director Gillette?
I have nothing. Happy New Year, everyone.
That was a good one. Thank you.
Non-controversial.
Director Lipscomb?
I've got two things that are not board reports. And one of them is that I went to the recent Improvement Club, Kensington Improvement Club meeting, and we will be having a cleanup on Ardmore Path. Many of you know that we get out there on a regular basis whenever we can, and assuming it doesn't rain and if the creek don't rise, we will be out there with pitchforks in hand from 10 to 12 on Ardmore Path. And, you know, come bring a friend, bring a shovel, bring clippers. That's where what we'll be cleaning up. There will be future ones in March and in May. Gretchen Gilfillan is our path wandering lady who heads this up, and she's expected to be there as well between 10 and noon. So it's January 19th. And my second thing is, as you know, we have been tracking an interesting case. Interesting because it affects us particularly regarding the vehicle license fees and the validity that of Prop 30 that has been challenged under a case called California League of Cities versus John Chang et al. That case challenges whether or not there can be an allocation of vehicle license fees to local entities for law enforcement fundamentally. The theory of the case, as I've read it, now I've read all the pleadings that exist, is essentially that in the realignment and various things that have occurred where local entities have to take on what they have regarded as state requirements, that fundamentally it requires an unfunded mandate on the part of the local entities and reallocating these vehicle license fees to those purposes is under the California Constitution unconstitutional. So I've been watching the case. The last briefing, we had expected to have a decision already by the end of this past year. Reason it's important to Kensington. reason it's important to Kensington is we get $100,000 a year for the COPS grant, and the COPS grant comes out of that, so it's big in our budget. And we want to make sure that we continue to get that. The state is defending it. Attorney General Kamala Harris says her deputy, Kathleen Lynch, has done a wonderful job briefing it, and I just read the last briefs on this. They were filed December 17th. It's my understanding that the judge has up to 90 days past the filing of these briefs to produce an opinion, so in 3 months or so, we ought to have an opinion on that. Hoping we win on that. And that's the end of my report.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I have one thing that I think is worth reporting on. I attended the LAFCO meeting this week, another layer of government that helps us figure out where our budget money is going and how we get our services. But and the thing that was most important, two things that happened in LAFCO. Number one, they do the MSR, the service reviews of the various areas relative to how well that they operate, Kensington, El Cerrito, Albany, et cetera, so a lot of the opinions that are formed about how efficient local government is comes out of the LAFCO studies, and it's funded through their process, and it's chaired by the supervisors for the various within the county. And they also look at the police departments and the fire departments. They do a similar type of assessment. We've used the information from LAFCO extensively in making our case for taxing and non-taxing and how to get bonds, et cetera, et cetera. So it's important. One of the things they also look at are the agencies such as libraries. And there was a readout of the libraries for Contra Costa County this Wednesday. And let me just stop short of saying that we need to take a real good look at what's going on with our library here in Kensington. It's severely underfunded. It's underwater, and the chances are that it's not going to get funded, and that's going to have an impact on our lifestyle and our community. So please pay attention to what's going on there with the Friends of Kensington Library, and to the extent that you would like to get involved, as in lend your support for any type of economic support for that organization. It's really important because it's. It's not on the plus side of the ledger right now in terms of how the funding is going to go in the future. Okay. With that, I will ask the chief if he has any comments.
Yeah, under staff comments, I was just going to follow up with that. Those of you that are interested in the library, I would really strongly urge you to go to the MSR report. Go to Contra Costa County, LAFCO, and then pull up the MSR report on the library system, and pay particular attention to the county's description of the county services when they talk about the El Cerrito Library and the Kensington Library. I think if you read that, I think it would cause you concern. So I strongly urge you, if you're interested in the library, to read that report. And that's about the only comment I have. Sergeant Hall, do you have any traffic report?
Particularly have a traffic report for Kensington per se, but I just want everyone to know that currently El Cerrito is also working on getting their traffic under control on Calusa Avenue. As those of you who have attended past meetings may know that due to an accident we had in town, there has been some discussion about putting up some traffic devices to help control traffic in town also. So at some point here in the future, you will probably see traffic control devices from Kensington all the way to, I think it's Terrace or Stockton on Calusa Avenue. And anything else?
I have one more quick one, I forgot. Next Thursday, on the 17th, in this room, 7 p.m., the Kensington Public Safety Council will be hosting a identity theft prevention workshop here. And Doug Wilson's working with that group. And it's Doug was asking me about borrowing more chairs from other organizations, so it's going to be full house, and if you're at all concerned about identity theft, I would strongly urge you to come to this meeting, this workshop. I don't know about the rest of you, but I've been a victim of identity theft, and it's not fun. And that's all I have.
Thank you, Chief Harmon. All right, at this point, we can move on to the approval of the consent calendar. Are there any items on the consent calendar that my colleagues would like pulled?
I'd like to pull item E.
Item E,
board reports.
Board reports.
I have a procedural question. I have a question I want to ask about the police department update. Do I pull it then?
Mm-hmm.
Then I pull it.
Okay. And item G. Are there any other comments? If not, then I would like to have a motion to pass the rest of the consent.
No, we need to pull those items.
Okay, well.
To discuss them?
We'll discuss them first?
Mm-hmm.
Thank you very much. I'm still learning. Okay, let's go with item E first, board member reports.
Yes, thank you, President Lloyd. I am pulling item E because I want to report on the policy committee. We have had a very hard time getting people together over the holidays. I would have liked to have come here with a first reading of the expense policy because we were, as you know, for background for those who are not following all of this regularly, we have undertaken to revise the policy manual in general. And some of the policies, such as the expense policy, we've put particular focus on and we're escalating them over the whole thing rather than waiting for the whole thing and trying to get that through. During the last meeting we had was in November, and during December we were just unable to get everybody together for a December meeting. I'm looking at, I'd love to get a meeting by Tuesday the 22nd, but I haven't been in touch with the, I guess I've got to call her the circulatory system of the policy committee, and that's Barbara Diltz. She's been just wonderful in typing up all of the changes to the policy manual, and she's really fundamental to those meetings. So I'm hoping that we will have a meeting on the 22nd, and Joan Gallegos had asked us also, if possible, to focus on the section for agendas, and those would be the two focuses that I would have for that night, the expense policy and agendas. So I will confirm that. If you are interested in contacting me about notice of the policy meetings, I just send it to lyndalipscomb@hotmail.com, and I will send it on to the chief, and he can send it out to you by email. Thank you.
Thank you, Frank Lipscomb. Okay, and item G, I believe, was pulled, the police department update. That was you.
Yeah, so I just have a question. There are, in the third bullet, it's listing investigation of alleged misconduct, and there are three bullet items there referring to investigations. I'm curious, since they start in May of 2012 and go to June 29, 2012. Are these ongoing investigations, and if so, when will they be concluded?
I think probably Chief Harmon would be best to address that.
Yeah, those are ongoing. I leave them in the calendar, so I'm not accused of dropping them off and not making them public. And for an idea when those are going to get done, our IA sergeants in the room, you have a timetable?
I would suspect both of those investigations will probably be done by the end of March or thereabouts.
But I just have a question on why it takes so long.
That the investigation itself takes so long. It's just that those things are being completed along with other responsibilities that I have.
Okay. Well, I think given the nature of the investigations, any speed we can put behind that to get it done, I understand how busy you are, but I would move that to the top of the list of getting things done.
Okay, thank you, Director Gillette. If there's nothing more, then I would call for a motion to accept the consent calendar.
So moved.
Second?
I second that.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. It's accepted unanimously. That was an aye. It was accepted unanimously. Okay, we're now time to move into new business. We have some wonderful guests here tonight that brought with them a proposal that can only benefit all of the community. There are a number of people, Charles Ramsey, who is the Secretary of the School Board, and then there's also David Leifer and a host of people. So first, before we get into their topic matter, which is going to be to present us with a resolution that hopefully we will all get behind and that will complete the cycle within the larger community of supporting the funding, perhaps I can ask our guests to stand up and introduce themselves. And then I think, David, are you going to be leading off, or Charles?
Charles is going first.
Charles, would you mind introducing your team?
No, I'm promising.
Thank you.
Defer to our board president. Good evening, everyone, and Happy New Year. My name is Charles Ramsey. I'm school board member West Contra Costa. I have here with us tonight our school board president and local resident, Madeline Cronenberg. She's board president, so I'm going to really
welcome.
Defer to her because she's our leader, and I want to make sure that she speaks to the body here tonight about what we're proposing to do, so I'll have her lead the discussion. We also have from K&N Public Finance, the managing director of the company, David Leifer, and then we have Jeff Barada here, one of the underwriters who is part of the negotiated bond team for us from Piper Jaffray. His name is Jeff Barada. So I'm going to turn it over to Madeline and then let her explain what we've done and what we're planning.
Thank you.
Come up, gentlemen. I don't know if you've all gotten a copy of the presentation. This is the presentation. Yes, I will. Thank you. Thank you. This is a presentation regarding our school board, school bond program. And as you know, if you've lived in this community, we've come before you a number of times and asked for support around passing our bonds, and we've received that. The issue now is, and it's been a wonderful level of support. We've rebuilt Kensington. We've rebuilt El Cerrito High. We're rebuilding Portola, the schools that Kensington students go to. And beyond that, we've rebuilt most of the district schools that all of the children in all seven of our communities attend. Our issue now is we have been impacted by the AV decline and the impact of the in general, and the impact of that decline has been that we need to request that the state of California give us a waiver of a debt limit in order to issue our bonds. And this is it's a technical thing, but this technical debt limit requirement, if we don't get the waiver issued to us by the state of California, by the Board of Education, we're not going to be able to issue our bonds and go forward with our building program. It's incredibly important to us that we go forward with it. It's a promise that everybody made, and the voters passed this along with the parcel tax. Our last measure was passed. You all remember we came up here and we talked to everybody and sent you tons of mail last November and throughout the entire season. And now we're back. And this is a hiccup in the system, although we knew it was going to happen. And we actually put in the bond that we were going to come back. And that the step two for us in this particular process is to request this waiver. And that's the short story. They get paid a lot of money to tell you the long story, so I'm going to have them come up and tell you the long story.
Not that much.
One last thing I'd like to add so there can be some content.
While we're doing it, the district believes that showing the State Board of Education, which will vote on this in either early March or early May, that there is an understanding and appreciation for being able to support and sustain the program. And so we've gotten unanimous support from the city of El Cerrito, city of Richmond, city of Pinole, city of San Pablo, the West County Wastewater District, and the Stege Sanitation District, all unanimous. We go to the Rodeo Hercules Fire District on February 13th, and we'll be with the City of Hercules next week. We believe that it's important that public safety and things that we're trying to do around earthquake preparedness and safety and upkeep of all our facilities. You saw we just demolished Portola Middle School because it was a seismically unsafe facility. And to be able to continue this, we need to have, it's somewhat technical, but the waiver, even though Portola is already funded, we just want to have a steady stream and keep our tax rates low so that we don't have to issue as much over this period of time and save you, the ratepayers, a substantial amount of money. And also not lose on the fact that we get state eligibility money. The beautiful thing about this bond program, because we've passed so many, is we've been able to take advantage of the state eligibility funds, and we've gotten over $125 million free dollars that do not go against the tax rate, including $20 million for Portola Middle School because it's at the top of the list for seismic concerns. And so That's a big plus. One thing that wasn't mentioned that is impactful in this community, even not just to the students but to the entire community, is the El Cerrito Stadium project. So the new facility there, seniors and students and all the people in the community will be able to use the track and field for extracurricular activities as well as exercise. And so that's really impactful to this. And so we really hope and encourage this body to support it. And we hope that we can also partner with the city of El Cerrito for the old site to landscape it and then put some play fields up there for soccer and other community uses so that the community here will have some additional places to use. We know that we're short of play fields, and so we want to be able to promote that. But I'm going to let
the support from the teacher.
Yeah, oh, that's also, we've also been able to get the support from our local union, so local one, which are the classified employees and the United Teachers of Richmond, have unanimously passed resolutions in support of this measure. So we just believe it's healthy to be transparent, to make sure we continue to educate and inform people. And realize the community of Kensington voted at this at over 70%. It was the size of the city of San Pablo. This was higher than any other community in the district. It was 64.4% overall, but over 70% of Kensington voters voted for the bond measure, and 85% voted for the last parcel tax. So we get the highest level of support from the residents in this community, and so we think it's incumbent for all of us to come to you and to really team together and get validated by this committee and this body, selected body. I'll turn it over.
Thank you, Charles.
Thank you, Charles. Good evening. Thank you, Mr. President, members of the board, members of the public. My name is David Leifer with the firm K&N Public Finance. We're municipal finance advisors, and we advise West Contra Costa Unified School District. And what I'm going to try and do is distill some of the technical issues that have been referenced tonight that are the basis of the waiver and the request for support. And I'm going to follow a brief PowerPoint presentation. There's some copies in the back if you don't have one. And what I'd like to do is first just provide a little bit of the history about the district's bond program, because I think that'll help to provide a context for the issue that we're facing, and then jump in and explain the waiver that we need and the reason for this request tonight. So that's my plan, and we can answer questions. We've got a team of folks here to answer your questions if there are any. So on page one, just a little bit about the history. Really, the district has been addressing school facility needs on an ongoing and consistent basis since 1998. Like many districts, you know, facilities were in, you know, relatively poor condition for many years. You know, over the past 15 years, as this effort has begun, district voters have approved six separate bond measures totaling $1.63 billion, and the district has already expended more than about $800 million of bond proceeds on facilities projects within the district. As a result, modernization has occurred at more than half of the schools in the district, but there's more work to be done. I mean, that's really the takeaway from this page, is that a lot has been done to date, but there's more work that we need to do. On page two, just talk briefly about the success of the program. It really has been, in my view, in our view, a remarkable success from any number of points of view in terms of community pride, in terms of providing students with really top-rate, first-class facilities within which to learn. That we've had really a significant impact on student learning as a result of facility improvements, and community opinion surveys indicate a very high level of satisfaction with the work that the district has done in terms of modernization and improvements of its facilities. On page three, just a word about the challenges now. We've talked about the success. The program really has been built, and despite a number of challenges, first, it's a big program. We have a lot of needs due to the state of the facilities since the mid-90s, due to, you know, high building standards and other factors. The bond program is large. Second, the district overall serves some relatively low-income communities, and as a result, the tax base is small relative to the number of students that we serve, and that sets sets us apart from other districts and in other areas with different factors. Third, some of you may be familiar with something called Proposition 39. It places legal limits on the tax rate that can be levied to repay bonds authorized under a single bond measure. And we're going to talk about what that means, but it sets it's a protecting device. It protects taxpayers, but as a result, it also poses challenges from the bond program perspective. And finally, the issue at hand is that state law limits a school district's bonding capacity to a certain percentage of tax base. So you look at your tax base at the time you want to issue bonds, you look at all your outstanding debt, and you apply this formula that the state has. So on page 4, why has the district been able to overcome the challenges I just talked about? Really, it's because of public support. And Charles and Madeline have already sort of mentioned the overwhelming support which voters in this district have had for all of the bond measures, especially just this last bond measure. There have been voices in the community that are critical of the bond program, as there are in many programs across the state. The tax rates are higher than some and in other places. Not every bond measure that's voted on touches every school in the community. So often voters will be voting for a program that doesn't touch their community with the hope and expectation that later voters will again support another measure for improvements that will touch their community. And it works as an overall program. There are these legal hurdles I've talked about with Prop 39, and yet the takeaway is that each of the six bond measures, as Charles mentioned, has been approved by a supermajority vote. We had, I think, 50,000 yes votes on this last election, and overwhelmingly the public comment that comes to the district board has been positive at our school board meetings. Charles mentioned student safety, and I think that is a timely issue right now, obviously in light of recent events. Student safety has been and continues to be an important part of the district's bond program overall. By law, student safety improvements are considered in connection with each of the measures. Building standards are regularly updated to address improvements that benefit student safety. And recently, as an example, the district has been installing security cameras at a number of school sites throughout the district. So we believe that the bond program and student safety go hand in hand, and I think that's an important point in the current community, and it was part of the measure that was passed by voters. So, moving on to page 6. Why are we here tonight? Well, we want to talk about this concept of a bond capacity limitation. We've made reference to the fact that state law limits the amount of bonds that a district can have outstanding relative to the size of its then current tax base. So again, we look at our tax base at the time we want to issue the bonds. We compare it to our overall tax base, and we see if it meets this threshold that the state has set. Unified school districts, of which we're one, may not issue bonds if doing so causes the amount of bonds to exceed 2.5% of the tax base at the time of issuance. So that's the threshold that the state has set initially. Currently, the district has bonds outstanding in an amount that exceeds that. So we've been through this process before. We've asked for waivers before, and they've been granted by the State Board of Education. We hope and expect that they will again when they see the evidence of the support of the community. But let me point out that without a waiver of this Ed Code provision, the district will not be able to issue bonds, or certainly not as much bonds, under the new measure that was just voted on in 2012, even though the measure was really placed on the ballot, we think, in response to concerns among the district and the voters about plans to slow down the facilities and to slow down the bond program and to slow down the improvements. So if we don't get the waiver, we're going to have to slow down, and we think the voters don't want us to do that. We know that. So that's what this is about. Let me just talk for 1 minute about the waiver process itself on page 7. So we talk about this limit that exists. Fortunately, there is a process through which bonding capacity limitation can be waived. So this 2.5% limit at the time of the look can be waived. The State Board of Education has the power to waive the provisions of any Ed Code requirement under certain conditions. And this application process meets those conditions, of course. The bonding capacity limitation concept itself dates back a long time, well before this Prop 39 was passed, that in some ways this whole limitation has been superseded in terms of protecting taxpayers by Prop 39, which imposes a limit on how much bonds you can issue as a percentage of your assessed value. The State Board of Education, as I mentioned, has consistently approved the bonding capacity waivers in the past for our district. There have been three for West Contra Costa in 2002, 2009, 2011, and we're coming again in connection with the new measure. Last night, and our board members can certainly address that, the District Board of Education, the board itself, approved a resolution instructing staff to go ahead and submit the waiver application, and we're going to submit that this week. And there was a very robust public discussion at that meeting, and the support of the school district board was unanimous. Consequence, briefly on page 8, of failing to achieve the waiver, I think I already addressed that, but if we fail, the district will not be able to issue bonds under the new measure, the 2012 Measure E, at least not for a long time, until the assessed value raises significantly. And without that waiver, we really are going to have to slow down the construction and bond program considerably. A number of high-profile projects would need to be delayed. I know that Charles can speak to that better than I. And delays, you know, as we said, not every bond issue touches every community, so a delay can create inequities between the communities in terms of the ability to modernize the facilities across the entire district, and really ties the district's hands in terms of the tools it has to go and raise the money necessary to meet the improvement needs that we have. So in closing and in final, on page 9, if you will, a supporting resolution from you, from the board, will provide further evidence, we think, of the broad public support enjoyed by the district's program here in Kensington. As Charles mentioned, the unincorporated area of Kensington is a significant part of the district's service area. It's almost like a sixth city, we view it, and it comprises more than 4% of the overall district tax base. So you're a significant player in this, you have a significant voice, and it will mean a lot to us in our process with the state to be able to say that you're supporting our effort. We believe that the residents in the community have benefited from the bond program, of course, through the reconstruction of the elementary school in Kensington. And, of course, we wish to send a message to the state that this waiver really enjoys an enormous broad support of the public here in Kensington and throughout the community. So with that, I think I'm going to stop and open it up for any questions.
Just have one.
Yeah, of course.
Part of it. And I emailed, and I'm sorry, Board Member Gillette, because I just didn't have your email, but I asked them to forward to you the assessed values here and the percentage that we had here in Kensington, because we were surprised. It was large. I mean, 4% of the total overall base. It's almost as high as the city of San Pablo. So Kensington pays a large portion of it, 4%. But I wanted to have Jeff come up and say a little bit about why this waiver also helps the taxpayers and what it does in terms of when we issue the debt and what we can avoid in some of the crises that we've heard in other school districts in the state of California, something that we've been able to avoid, just about the cabs and those kind of issues.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Ramsey. Mr. Lloyd, Board of Directors and community, I'm Jeff Barata, Piper Jaffray. We're an investment bank that provides underwriting services to my niche, specifically California school districts. The real purpose that I'm standing here tonight is to kind of bridge a little bit of the gap. This waiver means a lot to the community, but it also means a lot to the community taxpayers and the investors alike. And I would state to Mrs. Cronenberg that second step would in fact be more like step 27 or step 117. I mean, this started some time ago. And so what this district has done is given itself some flexibility that other districts throughout the state have just not been able to enjoy. That flexibility, there are multiple authorizations. We've got six, multiple different tax rates that are being levied that each one of the voters have approved. And Mr. Leifer is absolutely correct. The bonding capacity limit has been superseded by our Prop 39 tax rate limits. You cannot waive the tax rate limitation. You can waive your overall percentage. So as long as the voters continue to tell you, yes, you can tax us at this amount and this amount and this amount, then you have your safe harbor, if you will. You're over the top. And what does that mean to folks like me on my side of the street? It means the investors grow comfortable with the overall program. It means the investors understand that you can structure bond deals under certain circumstances. And some of you may have been following this in the paper, some of you may not, but traditionally you can issue under a program like this with all this flexibility, current interest bonds. The least expensive manner in which to issue bonds for the state of California today. And this district has set itself up with these multiple bond authorizations. If you don't have that, if you don't have that capacity, you're forced to go out and issue what's called capital appreciation bonds. And it's an arcane discussion, but having said that, it's more expensive. And I think that's more important than any of the description of it. It's more expensive, which means higher tax rates. So without the waiver, the district would be forced to move that down that path. And certainly with the waiver and the overarching structure of the tax itself, keeping you into that safe harbor category, not only do the schools come sooner, they come less expensive, and the investors actually get a little bit more excited about it because they know that there is that support system here. Thank you.
Thanks, Jeff.
Yeah, that concludes our presentation. Just one final part that I think is important. Because our district has shovel-ready projects, the fact that this program has been uninterrupted for 14 years, the state of California now has said for school projects, if you're not ready, you're not going to be able to secure the eligibility funding. And so we've been able to move ahead to the front of the line, and actually Portola Middle School got an extra $6 million because it was one of the only shovel-ready projects ready under the seismic hardship program. And so they saw that, gave us the funding, and made that happen. And so we want to continue to do this. This district's gotten over $125 million, as I stated before. But there's other funds that will become available that does not go against your tax rate, helps keep the safety protocols that we've talked about going and ensure that we update and upgrade our facilities. And so we're very excited about that. And so I'm just going to conclude. I'll call David and Madeline up if they had any questions from this body. If not, we hope that we can support this resolution. We conclude you with our application that goes tomorrow. Thank you. You want to come up, you guys?
Thank you very much for your presentation. I think what we'll do here next is, if there are questions from the community of our presenters, that please let's have them now, and then we'll turn it over to the board to raise their concerns, questions, and then I think that.
Well, maybe as far as protocol, I think it might be best if you open it up to board questions first before you open it to the community.
Okay. All right. But at some point in time, we have to go to the resolution.
Well, yeah. But
will you walk us through the resolution?
Well, no. I was going to have the board. Maybe the board might have some questions of the presenters.
I'm sure they do.
And then open it up for community questions.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Then I'm going to change that and say, does anyone on the board have questions of our presenters? Either way, you guys can leave.
I have two questions. I'm sorry.
Go ahead. Let's go.
First of all, I ask this at the risk of sounding like a total idiot. but I admit I'm only an employment lawyer, so I know nothing. Why is there a limitation in the first place? And what risk, if any, is there? What's the argument against voting for the waiver?
Well, I think and I'll let Jeff address this as well. I think the concept of the waiver, as I mentioned, dates back many, many years. I don't know if you know to when. It's probably 1800s. Yeah. So that was the initial, so the genesis of it was in the concept of trying to set some limits with an effort, I guess, to protect taxpayers. I mean, I assume that's really the intention, and to protect the district, and its financial wherewithal. In our case, our district has actually improved its financial standing despite and over the course of multiple bond issues. The ratings that have been assigned by the rating agencies for West Contra Costa Unified School District have been improved recently. We're now rated AA3 by Moody's and A+ by Standard & Poor's and Fitch. Some of those ratings are upgrades. So despite the incurrence of this debt, which is supported by voters, the school district's financial position has improved. So I think part of it was to protect against a degradation of the financial position of a school district, and part of it was to protect taxpayers. And I think the point we're trying to make is that now Prop 39 has been introduced, which, as Jeff pointed out, says, okay, the voters approve a certain amount of dollars per AV of taxes that they will allow to be levied to support bonds, and we, and any district in the state, it's not just us, that passes bonds under that proposition cannot exceed that. And so that's now a level of protection that is there for taxpayers, and as Jeff points out, it also sends a good message when we're selling the bonds to the investor community, and that helps us get lower interest rates and max, you know, do things with less money.
I don't know if you want to add to that.
The only thing that I would add is the comparison. The debt limit came about in the late 1800s, 1879, as Mr. Ramsey said. The Prop 39 limits came about in 2000. So it really has been an absolute change. Prior to that, there were no tax rate limitations in the sense of being able to project out what your tax rates might be. So this really has been a fundamental shift in how school districts manage their debt program, and the debt limit actually has become really a non-event, and that's why the State Board of Education has a full-blown waiver process to go through. They haven't taken it off the books. I don't think they'll ever take it out of the Department of Ed, California Education Code, but they do have a very I would say streamlined approach to this typical waiver. This district is rather large, and we've been going to a number of different communities to get the support, but it is a fairly straightforward process. And as far as the second question, having to do with why would you not do that, I really, this may sound a bit gratuitous, I really can't come up with a reason why you would not want to do it, because the alternative is quite frankly just more expensive for the school district.
And because the voters have already voted to support the bond, so we're just trying to be in a position to go ahead and follow through on that.
Thank you. Quick question. You mentioned the bond limit of 5%. Is it a cumulative total amount of bonds against the 5%, or is it every year the bond is voted on that year you consider 5%? Or 2.5%?
That's a great question. And first and foremost, it is a snapshot in time and the moment at which you sell the bonds. So it's that percentage against your total assessed value less your total amount of outstanding bonds. So it is just that moment in time. And of course, each year as that assessed value grows, so does your bonding capacity.
But 5% is a separate cap on the total amount of bonds you can have outstanding at any one time?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Other board member questions?
Comment? My comments are, I think that I'm very proud of Kensington for supporting Measure E and for support for education in the past. I think there have been long delayed investments in infrastructure, and the most fundamental of those investments after you get finished with roads and water mains is our children. That's the future. So I think that's the first point, is I think it's a great investment in our future. The second thing is our own taxpayers have told us what they want us to do. And this procedure will actually improve our capacity to issue debt at the best possible time that I can remember for the issuance of this kind of debt, where interest rates are favorable. And by doing this waiver and having these protections in place, we're really protecting the integrity of that bonding system for the district, because the rating agencies And I know they haven't been exactly great in the area of mortgage-backed securities, but the rating agencies actually have some real numbers to hold on to here in evaluating the bonds. And because of that, the interest rates that the taxpayer will have to pay are going to be lower, and our money will go further. And we get a big chunk of change from the state in some measure, $125 million?
So far.
It's a win-win, the way I see it. So I would be very much in favor of it.
So now, I don't have any comments beyond my colleagues. Now, are there questions or comments from the community?
I just have one question. Is there superintendent of the whole district?
No, I'm actually, I'm just a board member. Superintendent of schools, Dr. Bruce Harder. So, right, it's okay. I'm pretty visible.
My question has to do with, in light of what happened in Connecticut.
Uh-huh.
What is the discussion going on in the country?
Well, we have, for a long time, had conversations ongoing with all of our local police agencies and coordination and cooperation, and so we just try to make sure that we secure our sites. We have mental health service programs at all of our high schools so that all of our kids know that there's a place. The Morehouse Project, for example, at El Cerrito High helps talk to the students and ensure that they have places and outlets they go. We deal with bullying, and then we try to work with the greater community on gun awareness and try to make sure that everybody understands the consequences and lets them know that we want schools to be a safe haven, a safe place to have our children. So we've done our best. We now have security. We just saw last night, we have 79 security cameras with the El Cerrito High. We try to have them linked to our local law enforcement offices so that they can coordinate and watch and observe and make sure that all of our students and all of our citizens are safe in those facilities.
Do you have any special training?
Well, that's a good question. I don't think on, like, being, like I saw something last night where teachers are armed in Utah. I don't think we're going in that direction, and they talked about that. But I think there will be conversations. I'll let Ms. Cronenberg talk about that because her daughter's actually a teacher at El Cerrito High School.
Yes, she is. And I attended, we had a safety committee meeting this morning that I attended, and this identical question came up because many of our principals have had parents and community members contacting them since the tragedy. And we have instituted a safety walkthrough of all, we're revisiting all of our safety procedures and protocols throughout the district at each of our sites. We have a team of our own experts who've been operating under a federal safety grant, who are working with all of our sites on going through and assessing what vulnerabilities any particular site might have, and what the principals do need to know, where the holes are in their information. So we're going to be doing a report out on that exercise at our next board meeting. With the safety committee is going to report out on that, and then it's going to be a continuing conversation. And in addition, there's a resolution that's going to come forward is supporting Nancy Skinner's proposal regarding ammunition. Nancy Skinner has got a proposal that came out on Monday morning regarding limitations on ammunition, and so we're looking at that as well. And I think so is our larger boards, the School Board Association of the county, as well as the state.
Okay. My question is just a little bit different, and it has to do with what sort of impact all this has on the programs for the students. I'm thinking about things like class size reduction. I'm also thinking about something that is of interest to here in Kensington, and that's the adult education program, which, you know, there were some things at the church, those have been cut back, and I think there's been a problem with cutbacks in adult education throughout the district. And there is there some way to address that? Because these are all people who are part of our school community.
I'm going to let our school board, she actually was an adult school teacher, so we're actually one of the few districts that have been able to maintain a robust adult education program, and some of the programs, and our seniors actually came down and thanked us the other day, and with the passage of Prop 30, we've been able to continue a lot of those services, but go ahead.
So let me do two parts to it. When we're talking about programs, one of the things about building new schools is that the new schools support new programs. So they have more technology. They have the infrastructure that our programs need. So there's no question that there's a support mechanism there when you build the new school. Adult ed is an interesting story. The governor came out today. The adult ed proposals go up and down. Adult ed, today the governor's came out with a proposal. We all see Mr. Ramsey was on TV all day talking about that, because Governor Brown seemed to say this morning was he mentioned some communities and said that he was going to give more money to Richmond and take some away from Piedmont. That's the plan. And he was very specific, and he did say Richmond and Piedmont, so the news media went to Richmond and Piedmont, right? And Compton and Los Gatos, those were the other two places he mentioned. So I don't know if they went down to Compton and Los Gatos, but they certainly went to Richmond and Piedmont. And in this bigger proposal that the governor has put together, which is just at this point in the stage of being a proposal and requires lots of charm, as he put it, on his part to be able to move it forward. This is, relies on Governor Brown's ability to charm his way through to get this done. There is a big chunk of information about what adult ed will happen with adult ed, and what the governor proposes is that all of the what had been adult ed funds, specifically categorized funds that go to adult ed, all of it will go to community colleges. That's his plan. Now, it's not a done deal, but the adult ed community, and I'm sure that they all know this now, but if they haven't, they need to read that part of the plan. And I read it this morning. It's on the website. The adult ed community needs to respond to that. And that's really where we are right now. Right now, the funding sources that we have had, we were still getting. We were able to redeploy them to other things, but we did get the chunk of money that originally came for adult students. It appears that isn't the direction we're going to take if this entire proposal is adopted. And so I'm just telling you, that's where we are right now. And where that's going to be, where we'll be in, 6 weeks after they've gone through a conversation around the details of it, I don't know. But I think the adult ed advocates are going to be on top of it. And if they're not, they're going to be, it's going to go to community college.
One last thing you can share, because I think this is important for Kensington Elementary, that we did something unique in this bond measure, this last one. I think this is even why it's even more critical. We set aside $35 million to be able to go for education instruction through technology.
Right.
And Madeline's going to explain with the adoption of the Common Core and where we're going with that. Or you might.
So one of the other things we're doing is we did include that in Measure E, which of course we wouldn't be able to do if we're not able to get the money. And what the waiver, which would get us the money. What we're doing with that is we're going to be able to put in Wi-Fi throughout all of our schools so that they're going to be able to take all of the testing. The way that the Common Core, which is the new program that's coming in nationwide, the way that works is that all testing of all students is supposed to be done on computers. It's going to be because it's a virtual test. And so as you answer a question, depending on what your answer determines what your next question will be. And it's therefore able able to measure critical thinking, and it's got artificial intelligence built into the testing. But in order to be able to administer that, you need smarter buildings. So we're paying to do that. And the other thing we're going to put the money into is supporting our teachers with instructional technology. So that means physically smart boards that are within the building, the buildings to have smart boards in them, and building them to be able to have other than textbooks. We're not expecting to buy textbooks anymore. We did our last textbook adoption. We're expecting that the state of California is talking about we're going to have all electronic e-readers of one sort or another. And that's what we're going to have. So you're going to have to be able to support that, because they're not going to be making textbooks anymore. And it's like they changed the law around textbooks. And they're going to change everything else. So what we wanted to do is be positioned to be able to support our kids, because what we didn't expect was that the state's going to come in and give us money for infrastructure to do it, and certainly not to go back and fix things. So that's it. That's what we're doing. We did put a chunk in there, and that's district-wide. So that'll be, we'll go back to Kensington, which was an early school that was done. We'll certainly cover the new schools with the newest technology, and we'll also be able to go back and really, even now, retrofit El Cerrito, which looks like it wasn't done that long ago, but in the world of tech, it's behind the schools that we're opening in September and the ones that we're planning to open in 2 or 3 years.
Thank you. Okay. I think that given the time, I'm going to ask at this point, Chief Harmon, do you think we might be ready to entertain the resolution? Okay. Would you take us there?
For those of you following along, Resolution 2013-01 of the Kensington Police Protection and Community Services District in support of the West Contra Costa County Unified School Bonded Indebtedness Waiver. That's hard to say. Whereas the West Contra Costa County Unified School District serves to educate the children of Kensington, and whereas the service area of the Kensington Police Protection and Community Service District overlaps with the service area of the school district, and whereas the residents of our service area have already benefited from the district's $1.63 billion facilities bond program, the purpose of which is to bring all school district facilities to a common standard with regard to seismic structural safety, upgrades to building systems, new classrooms, technology upgrades, surveillance cameras, and safety security, and will continue to benefit from this ongoing program in the future. And whereas the district's facilities bond program has broad community support, as evidenced by the 6 successful bond measures held in the district since June 1998, including the 2012 Measure E, a $360 million bond measure approved by 64% of the voters in November 2012. And whereas the California Education Code limits the amount of bonds that a unified school district cannot issue bonds, which will cause the total amount of bonds that is outstanding to exceed 2.5% of its then current assessed valuation, but also provides the State Board of Education the authority to waive this limitation, which the State Board of Education has done many times in the past for school districts throughout the state, including the West Contra Costa Unified School District. And whereas, because the bonding capacity limitation is based on excess value, school districts that are in the same size as the school district that are located in a more affluent areas have much larger bonding capacities than the school district, and in some cases as such as 2 to 5 times as large. And whereas the interests of the local residents are protected by holding of multiple bond elections, all of which have required supermajority support, by Proposition 39 tax rate limitations, which limit the maximum tax rate impact of each bond measure, and by the policies of school district boards of education, which has acted proactively to ensure that annual tax rates have been within the projected maximum, even in the face of difficult economic circumstances, and whereas there have been 46 separate tax rates levied by the Contra Costa County in connection with the district's five existing bond measures over the past 14 years, and each of those 46 tax rates have been established at or below targeted maximums, and whereas the school district's current financing plan indicates that, assuming that a waiver is approved by the State Board of Education, the school district will be able to proceed with its facility bond program and issue all $360 million of Measure E 2012 bonds without causing tax rates to exceed the targeted maximum, and the school district's Board of Education will consider adjusting the pace and repayment structure of future bond issues in order to meet its tax rate targets. And whereas residents of our service area will benefit from the school district proceeding with its facility bond program by issuing bonds under Measure E 2012 and have expressed their interest in having the school district do so by voting in favor of Measure E 2012, now, therefore, be it resolved that the Kensington Police Protection and Community Service District does hereby support the West Contra Costa Unified School District's application to the State Board of Education for a waiver of its statutory bonding capacity. And now it would be called for a vote of the board. Yeah?
I move that we adopt the resolution as read by Chief Allen.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
All, it's unanimous and no opposed. Thank you very much.
I'm glad you didn't ask me to read it again. Could I suggest maybe a quick 5-minute break to let those members leaving?
We'll be in recess for 5 minutes. We have to sign some paperwork and let people out. And then we're going to talk about the appointment of director. 5 minutes.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I went to drink some. It's like 50 in there.